lank hair falling down on either side of her face. Alice itched to snip it off. She would look so much prettier with short hair. Actually, that could be the perfect punishment. You cut her hair, kid, so I'm going to cut yours. After her tears in the schoolyard, Madison hadn't said a word. Nick had driven in his shiny car and had spent a lot of time talking on his hands-free mobile. He laughed, he listened, he gave short, sharp instructions. He said, "Let me think about it." He said, "Well, that's a disaster," while glancing over his shoulder to switch lanes. He said, "Well done, that's great news." He was such a boss. "Do you enjoy work at the moment?" Alice asked him at one point between calls. Nick glanced over at her. "Yes," he said after a few seconds. "I love it." "That's great," said Alice, happy for him. Nick raised an eyebrow. "You really think so?" "Of course," said Alice. "Why wouldn't I?" "Nothing," said Nick, and Alice could sense Madison listening carefully from the back seat. Nick had turned his phone off now and had left his jacket and tie in the car. Now he was taking off his shoes and socks. Alice looked at his bare feet digging into the sand. His feet were as familiar as her own. How could she not be with someone forever when even their feet, his huge, not especially attractive feet with their long hairy toes, felt like home? "Beautiful," said Nick, gesturing at the smooth, hard yellow sand, the huge turquoise sky, the ferry chugging its way across the harbor to the city. "Beautiful." He said it in the same satisfied tone that he would use to describe a good meal at a restaurant, as if the weather and the beach had been prepared especially for him and presented on a plate. And yes, thank you, it was all up to his high standards and there would be a generous tip as a result. It was so typical Nick. He held up his face to the sun and closed his eyes. Alice took off her own boots. Beautiful. Her taste was impeccable, if she did say so herself, and pulled off her socks. "They're Tom's soccer socks," said Madison, looking up from her knees. "I was in a rush," said Alice. Madison gave her a look. "And that scarf you're wearing is from Olivia's dress-up box." "I know, but it's so beautiful." Alice lifted up the gauzy material. Madison gave her an inscrutable look and lowered her chin again. Nick opened his eyes. "Well, Madison, you promised ice creams," said Madison, glaring at Alice, as if this was to be yet another in a long line of broken promises. "That's right, I did," said Alice. Nick sighed. "I'll go." He put his shoes back on and looked down at Madison. "Don't you be telling your brother and sister that you got ice cream on the beach, will you? Or next thing, we'll have all the love children suspended from school." Madison giggled. "Okay." As Nick walked off, Madison said, "I don't want to say what happened in front of Daddy. It must be girl stuff." "All right, just tell me." Madison dropped her chin back to her knees and said in a muffled voice, "Chloe said that you and Mr. Gordon had..." Alice didn't catch the last word. "Pardon?" she said. "Sex," Madison choked out. "She said that you and Mr. Gordon probably did sex in his office, like 100 times. "Mr. Gordon?" "Oh, Dominic." "Darling," began Alice, wondering where to start. For one thing, she wasn't sure if it was true. Surely they wouldn't have had sex in his office, would they? "I nearly threw up. I had to take sort of deep breaths and put my hand over my mouth." "You didn't, did you? You never took off your clothes in front of Mr. Gordon, did you?" Well, if she had, surely Chloe wasn't privy to the information. Presumably Dominic hadn't made an announcement about it at school assembly. "Chloe Harper is a horrible liar," said Alice decisively. "I know," said Madison with relief. "That's what I said." She looked out at the water and pushed her hair back behind her ears. "Then she said that I was the ugliest girl in the whole school, but that part wasn't a lie. That part was true." Alice's heart broke for her. It certainly was not true. "I got this feeling," said Madison, "a feeling like my head was going to explode. She was standing in front of me, and I got out my scissors for art, and I cut off her plait. I just went snip, and it fell straight to the ground. And then, when she turned around, I threw my cake at her. It wrecked the cake. Nobody even got to taste it. It was the best cake I ever made.
Did you threaten to stab her with the scissors?
No! She just made that bit up so I would get into more trouble.
Is that the truth?
Yes, said Madison.
Okay, said Alice. Well, that was something.
Alice said, You know, Madison, people are going to say mean things to you all through your life, and if you keep reacting like that, you're going to end up in jail.
Madison seemed to consider that. Alice wondered whether her wise, tough love words were sinking in.
Actually, I'm too young for jail, said Madison.
Well, now you are, but when you're grown up...
When I'm grown up, it won't matter.
You mean you won't care if you go to jail? I think you will.
Madison rolled her eyes. No, I won't care if people say mean things to me because I'll be grown up. I can just say, who cares? I'm going to France.
Ah, of course. Alice could remember thinking something similar when she was a child. Once you were a grown-up, nobody could hurt your feelings, because how could your feelings possibly be hurt when you could drive a car wherever you wanted? Before she could think of a way to answer without disillusioning her, what was there to look forward to otherwise? A shadow fell over them.
Ice cream delivery.
Nick was standing above them, holding 3 ice cream cones.
I assume you still like rum and raisin, he said to Alice.
Of course. Fancy having to ask her that. They sat and ate their ice creams, looking out at the water.
Madison has just told me what Chloe said to her, said Alice. And it was something nasty and untrue.
Okay, said Nick carefully. He licked his ice cream and looked at them both.
So I guess we need to help Madison find some better ways to react when she feels angry.
I always take 10 deep breaths before I say anything when I'm angry, said Nick.
No, you don't, said Madison. You just yell straight away. So does Mum. And what about that time Mum threw that pizza box at you?
Oh my, they'd been setting fine examples for their children.
Alice cleared her throat. Well, the thing is, are you going to come home, please, Dad? Said Madison. I think you should come home now and be Mum's husband again. I'm pretty sure then I would stop being angry. Then I would never do another bad thing in my whole entire life. I could write that in a contract for you. So that means you could, like, sue me if I was ever bad, which I would not ever be.
She looked at her father with desperate entreaty. Sweetheart, began Nick. His face screwed tight as if he had a toothache. Then he stopped, distracted by some sort of disturbance on the beach. There were shouts and people running. Alice could see a small crowd of people forming up on the cliff above the aquarium, pointing at something in the water.
Humpback whales in the harbor!
A man cried at them, running along with a camera bouncing on his chest. Nick immediately leapt to his feet, still holding his ice cream. Madison and Alice looked up at him.
What are you waiting for? He said.
And the next thing, the 3 of them were running breathlessly along the beach, up onto the foreshore, and running around the walkway, their ice creams held precariously in front of them. They had to run a steep set of concrete steps, and Alice drew ahead, one hand holding her ice cream, the other holding up her skirt as she effortlessly leapt up the steps 2 at a time. As she reached the top, she was in time to see a massive plume of water shoot up from the water below them.
It's a mother and her calf, said a woman to Alice. Watch, just there, you'll see them again.
Nick and Madison pounded up the stairs behind her. Nick was breathing heavily. How did he get so unfit?
Where, said Madison. Her face was pink and anxious. Just watch, said Alice.
For a few seconds there was nothing but silence. The surface of the harbor rippled in the breeze, and a seagull squawked plaintively.
They've gone, said Madison. We've missed them. Typical.
Nick looked at his watch.
Come on, whale, thought Alice. Give us a break. The water erupted as a massive creature shot straight into the air. It was like something prehistoric had crashed through an invisible barrier into ordinary life. Alice caught a glimpse of a barnacle-encrusted white front. It seemed to hover in the air before slamming back into the water, with a flurry of icy, salty raindrops against their faces. Madison grabbed hold of Alice's arm. Her face was radiant with joy, speckled with droplets of water.
Look, Mum! Look!
The whale rolled luxuriously about, revealing huge curves of velvety black skin. its tail slapping the water as if enjoying a hot bath.
Madison, Alice, over there, it's the baby,
shouted Nick, and he sounded like a 16-year-old boy. The calf was splashing about in miniature imitation of its mother. Alice could almost imagine it gurgling with laughter.
Ha! Said Nick, idiotically. Ha!
All around them were faces full of joy and wonder. The sea air was cool on their faces, the sun warm on their backs.
Do it again, said Madison. Jump up again, Mother Whale.
Yeah, agreed the man with the camera. One more time.
And right on cue, she did. Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. Ben is threatening to ring you up. He thinks I'm behaving like a crazy person. Franny's letter to Phil.
Something quite extraordinary has happened, Phil.
As they walked back to the picnic rug, Madison danced around them. She was euphoric, skipping, jumping, swinging on Nick's hand, then Alice's, then both, people walking by, smiling at her.
That was the best thing I've ever seen, she kept saying. I'm going to blow that photo up into a poster and put it over my bed.
The man with the camera had taken Nick's email address and was going to send him the photo he'd taken.
Let's hope he didn't miss it, said Nick.
No, he got it, said Madison. He definitely got it.
Can I go paddle, just to feel the water?
She looked at Alice, and Alice looked at Nick. He shrugged.
Sure, said Alice.
Why not?
They watched her run down toward the water.
Do you think she needs counseling? Said Alice.
She's been through a lot, said Nick. Gina's accident, you and me. And she always feels things so deeply.
What do you mean, Gina's accident?
Alice thought about Madison's nightmare.
Get it off her.
Madison was with you, said Nick. She saw it happen. You don't remember it, do you?
No, said Alice. Just the feeling of it.
Although that feeling of sick horror seemed impossible here today, with the sun and sea, ice creams and whales.
There was a storm, said Nick. A tree fell on Gina's car. You and Madison were driving behind.
A tree. So that horrible image of a black leafless tree swaying against a stormy sky was real.
It must have been horrendous for both of you, said Nick quietly. He lifted a handful of sand and let the grains fall through his fingers.
And I wasn't...
What?
I wasn't as supportive as I should have been, said Nick.
Why weren't you? Asked Alice curiously. Honestly, I don't know, said Nick. I just felt detached. I felt like you wouldn't want my sympathy. I felt that if you'd had the choice, you would have preferred that I'd died rather than Gina. I remember I tried to hug you and you pushed me away as if I made you sick. I should have tried harder. I'm sorry.
But why would you think I'd prefer you to die? Asked Alice.
It seemed such a silly, childish, wrong thing to think.
We weren't getting on that well at the time. And you two were such good friends, said Nick.
I mean, that was great. That was fine. But
his lips did something funny. You told Gina that you were pregnant with Olivia before you told me.
Really? Why would she have done that?
I'm sorry.
Oh, well, it was only a small thing. He stopped. Also, once I overheard you saying something about our sex life, or lack thereof. I mean, I know women always talk about sex together. It was just the tone in your voice. It was such contempt for me. And then when she and Mike broke up, and you were going out to bars with her, trying to help her pick up men, I got the feeling that you were jealous. You wanted to be a single woman with her. I was in the way, cramping your style.
I'm so sorry, said Alice. She felt like some other woman had been horrible to Nick, as if he were describing an awful ex-girlfriend who had broken his heart.
And then Gina died, and that was it. You froze up. That's how it felt. You were like ice.
I don't understand why I did that, said Alice. If Sophie had died, she would have cried for hours in the safe, comforting circle of Nick's arms.
Is that why you didn't come to the funeral?
She asked.
Nick shrugged. I had to be in New York. It was a huge meeting,
something we'd been planning for months. But I told you a million bloody times I was happy to cancel. I kept asking if you wanted me at the funeral, and you said, do what you want. So I thought maybe you'd actually prefer it if I wasn't there. I wanted to go. She was my friend too, once upon a time. You always seem to forget that. She drove me crazy the way she bossed you around, but I still cared about her. It just got so confusing after she and Mike split up. I wanted to stay friends with him too, and you saw that as a betrayal of Gina. So did she. She was so mad with me. Each time I saw Gina, she'd say, seen Mike lately? And you'd both be shooting me evil looks as if I was the villain. I didn't see why I had to dump a good mate just because of one drunken... Anyway, we've been over it a million times. I'm just trying to say that I felt so, I don't know, awkward when she died. I didn't know how I was meant to act. I just wanted you to say, of course you should cancel the trip. Of course you should come to the funeral. I felt like I needed your permission. So all our problems were because of Gina and Mike, said Alice. These two strangers had destroyed their marriage. I don't think we can blame them for everything, said Nick. We argued. We argued over the most trivial things. Like what? Like, I don't know, cherries. One day we were going over to Mum's place for dinner, and I ate some cherries we were meant to be taking. It was the crime of the century. You would not let it go. You were talking about those cherries for months.
Cherries, pondered Alice.
I'd be at work where people respected my opinions, said Nick. And then I'd come home and it was like I was the village idiot. I'd pack the dishwasher the wrong way. I'd pick the wrong clothes for the children. I stopped offering to help. It wasn't worth the criticism. They didn't say anything for a few moments. Next to them, a family with a toddler and a baby laid out a rug. The toddler picked up a handful of sand with a determined expression on his face and went to drop it all over his baby sister's face. They heard the mother say, "Watch him!" And the father pulled him away just in time. The mother rolled her eyes, and the father muttered something they didn't catch. "I'm not saying I was perfect," said Nick, his eyes on the father. "I was too caught up in work. You'd say I was obsessed with it. You always talk about the year I was working on the Goodman Project. I was traveling a lot. You had to cope on your own with three children. You said once that I deserted you. I always think that year made my career, but maybe..." He stopped and squinted out at the harbour. "Maybe that was the year that broke our marriage." "The Goodman Project." The words put a bad taste in her mouth. "The bloody Goodman Project." The word bloody seemed to belong naturally before Goodman. Alice leaned back and pushed the heels of her boots deep into the sand. It all seemed so complicated. Her mistakes, Nick's mistakes. For the first time, it occurred to her that maybe their marriage couldn't be put back together. She looked over at the family with the two small children. Now the father was spinning the little boy around and the mother was laughing, taking photos of them with a digital camera. Madison walked up from the water toward them, carrying something in her cupped together hands, her face radiant. Nick's hand was next to Alice's on the picnic rug. She felt the tip of his finger lightly touch hers. "Maybe we should try again," he said. Chapter 29. George and Mildred turned up on Friday. Alice found them at the back of the garage. George was lying on his side as if he'd been kicked over. His once dignified lion's face was now stained a moldy green, which made him look ashamed, as if he were an old man with food all over his face. Mildred was sitting in the middle of a pile of old pots. There was a huge chip out of one paw, and she looked sad and resigned. They were both filthy. Alice had dragged them both onto the back veranda and was scrubbing them with a mixture of bleach and water, as recommended by Mrs. Bergen next door, who was thrilled that Alice had swapped sides on the development issue, and who was once again waving and smiling when she saw her, and asking Alice to send the children over to play on her piano any time they wanted. "We're not five anymore," said Tom wearily. "Doesn't she know we have a PlayStation?" Barb had offered to take Madison for a shopping trip on the first day of her suspension. "Don't worry, I won't spoil her," she'd told Alice.
No new clothes or anything. Unless she sees something really special, of course, in which case I'll put it away for her next birthday.
As Alice scrubbed, she wondered if George and Mildred would ever look the same again. Was it too late? Were they too scarred by the years of neglect? And would it be the same for her and Nick? Had each argument, each betrayal and nasty word, built up into an ugly, rock-hard layer covering what was once so tender and true?
Well, if it had, they would just have to chip away at it until it was gone. It would be fine, good as new. She scrubbed so vigorously at Mildred's mane that her teeth chattered.
The phone rang, and Alice put down the scrubbing brush with relief. It was Ben. His voice on the phone was deep and slow and very Australian, as if someone from the outback were calling. He said that Elizabeth had been sitting in bed watching television for the last 48 hours and screaming if he tried to turn it off, and he wasn't sure how long he should let this go on for.
"It must be because she's so upset about the last IVF cycle failing," said Alice, looking at her fridge with the photos of the children and the school newsletters and wishing she could somehow share this life with her sister.
There was a slight pause, and then Ben said,
"Yeah, well, that's the other thing. I found out that it didn't fail. I got a call from the clinic about her first ultrasound. She's pregnant."
Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. I can hear him in the next room calling Alice. I made him promise not to tell anyone I was pregnant.
I knew he would.
Liar. You have no idea of the fury I feel. Against him, his mother, my mother, Alice, you, Jeremy. I hate you all. For no particular reason.
I guess it's for the sympathy, the pity and understanding, but most of all, for the hope. The comments I'm about to hear.
This could be the one. I have a good feeling about this one.
Waves of red-hot fury keep rising up inside me. I'm trying to ride them like I imagine you might do with labor pains. I feel sick, and my breasts ache, and there's a funny taste in my mouth, and we've been here so many times before, and I can't go through it again. I can't.
And the thing that infuriates me the most, Jeremy, is that even though I'm saying it, and I'm believing it, and I know with all my heart that I'm going to lose this baby like all the others, I also know that underneath it all, that inanely positive, pathetic voice is still chirping, "But maybe."
Alice drove over to Elizabeth's place. She had to get directions from Ben, and none of the streets or the area seemed remotely familiar. Perhaps she didn't visit Elizabeth much, because she was so busy. Busy, busy, busy. They lived in a red brick cottage with a neatly mowed front lawn. It was a family neighborhood. There was a children's swing set in the front yard of the house next door, and a woman across the road was leaning into her car and unstrapping her baby from a car seat. It reminded Alice of her own street 10 years ago. She could hear the clamor of the television as soon as Ben opened the door.
"She wants it up really loud," said Ben. "Be ready. If you try and turn it off, she sounds like a trapped animal. It's freaking me out. I had to go to sleep in the spare room last night. I don't know if she even slept at all."
"So what do you think's going on?" asked Alice.
Ben shrugged his massive bare shoulders. "I guess she's scared she's going to lose it again. So am I. I mean, in a way I was almost relieved when I thought the blood test results were negative."
Alice followed Ben through the house. Very clean, neat and bare, no clutter, into the bedroom, where Elizabeth was sitting up in bed with the remote in one hand and an exercise book and pen resting on her lap. She was still wearing the same outfit she wore at the seminar for the butchers on Wednesday, except her hair was a tangled mess and her mascara had smudged, so she had thick black shadows under her eyes. Alice didn't say anything. She just kicked off her shoes and hopped into bed beside Elizabeth, pulling the covers up and putting a pillow behind her back. Ben hovered uncertainly at the door.
"Okay," he said. "I'll be working on the car."
"Okay," Alice smiled at him. Alice glanced at Elizabeth's profile. Her face was set, her eyes fixed on the television. Alice stayed silent. She couldn't think of the right thing to say. Maybe just being there would be enough.
An old episode of MASH was on the television. The familiar characters and the sudden bursts of canned laughter took Alice straight back to 1975. She and Elizabeth, sitting on that old beige couch after school, waiting for their mother to come home from work, eating ham and tomato sauce sandwiches on white bread. Alice's mind drifted. She thought about this strange little period of time in her life that began when she woke up in the gym last Friday morning. It was like this past week had been a holiday in an exotic destination that required the learning of unusual new skills. So many things had happened. Meeting the children, seeing Mum and Roger together, the family talent night. Finally, she felt Elizabeth stir next to her. Alice held her breath. Elizabeth said irritably, "Don't you have things to do?" "None more important than this." Elizabeth grimaced and pulled at the blanket so it came away from Alice's legs. Alice pulled it back over her. MASH had finished and Elizabeth changed the channel. Audrey Hepburn's delicate features filled the screen. Elizabeth switched it again to a cooking show. Alice felt like coffee. She wondered if it would break the moment, whatever this moment was, if she went into the kitchen and made herself a cup to bring back to bed. Oh, for a Dino's large double-shot skim latte. Dino. She dived for her handbag, which she'd left on the floor next to the bed, and rummaged through it. She pulled out the fertility doll and carefully placed it on the sheets between herself and Elizabeth. It looked back at them with inscrutable boggle eyes. Alice angled it so it was facing Elizabeth. More time passed, and Elizabeth said, "Okay, what is that thing?" "It's a fertility doll," said Alice. "Dino from the coffee shop gave it to me to give to you." Elizabeth picked it up and examined it. "I guess he's trying to insure against me kidnapping more of his customers' children." "Probably," agreed Alice. "What am I meant to do with it?" "I don't know," said Alice. "You could bring it sacrificial offerings?" Elizabeth rolled her eyes. There was a glimmer of a smile. Elizabeth put the doll on the bedside table next to her. "It would be due in January," she said. "If it..." "Well, that seems like a good time to have a baby," said Alice. "It wouldn't be too cold when you got up in the night to feed." "There won't be any baby," said Elizabeth viciously. "We could ask Dad to put in a good word for you," said Alice. "He must be able to pull some strings up there." "Do you think I didn't ask Dad with the other pregnancies?" said Elizabeth. "I prayed to the lot of them. Jesus, Mary, Saint Gerard. He's meant to be the patron saint of fertility. None of them listened. They're ignoring me." "Dad wouldn't be ignoring you," said Alice, and her father's face was suddenly clear in her mind. So often she could only remember the face that appeared in photos, not the face from her own memory. "Maybe he's got to deal with a lot of bureaucrats in heaven." "I don't think I believe in life after death anyway," said Elizabeth. "I used to have all these romantic ideas about Dad taking care of my lost babies. But then it got out of hand. He'd be running a whole bloody daycare center." "At least it would take his mind off the sight of Mum and Roger salsa dancing," said Alice. This time, Elizabeth definitely smiled. She said, "Mum remembers all my due dates. She calls first thing in the morning and chats. Doesn't say anything about the date, just chats away." "She seems good with the children," said Alice. "They adore her." "She's a good grandma," sighed Elizabeth. "I guess we've forgiven her," said Alice. Elizabeth turned to look at her sharply, but she didn't say, "Forgiven her for what?" It was something they'd never really talked about. Well, as far as Alice knew, they'd never talked about it. The way Barb had stopped being a mother after their dad died. She'd just given up. It had been shocking. Overnight, she became a mother who couldn't care less if they left the house without warm clothes, or if they cleaned their teeth, or if they ate their vegetables. And did that mean she'd only been pretending to care before? Even months afterward, she just wanted to drift around all day, holding their hands while she cried over photo albums. That's when Franny had stepped in and given their lives structure and rules again. Alice and Elizabeth had stopped thinking of Barb as their mother, and more as a slightly simple older sister. Even when she eventually recovered and started trying to exert her authority, they didn't really let her be the mother again. It was a subtle but definite form of revenge.
Yes, said Elizabeth after a while. I guess we did eventually forgive her. I don't know when exactly, but we did.
It's strange how things work out.
Yes. They watched an ad for a carpet sale, and Elizabeth spoke again. I feel really angry. I can't tell you how angry I feel.
Okay, said Alice. More silence.
We've wasted the last 7 years trying to create a life for ourselves. Just a standard suburban life with 2.1 kids. That's all we've been doing. We haven't been actually living. And now this will put everything on hold for a few months longer until I lose it, and then I'll have to get over that, and then Ben will be at me to fill in the adoption papers, and everybody will be all enthusiastic and supportive. Oh, yes, adoption. How lovely. How multicultural. And they'll expect me to forget this baby.
You might not lose it, said Alice. You might actually have this baby.
Of course I'm going to lose it.
The cooking show host drizzled honey into a pan.
You must use non-salt butter. That's the secret.
Elizabeth said, All I need to do is pretend I'm not pregnant, so that if I lose it, it won't hurt so much. But I can't seem to do that. And then I think, okay, just be hopeful. Assume it will work. But then every moment I'm scared. Every time I go to the bathroom, I'm scared of seeing the blood. Every time I go for an ultrasound, I'm scared of seeing their faces change. You're not meant to worry because stress is bad for the baby, but how can I not worry?
Maybe you could delegate the worrying to me, said Alice. I could worry all day long for you. I'm an excellent worrier, you know that.
Elizabeth smiled and looked back at the television. The cooking show host pulled something out of the oven and sniffed rapturously.
Voila!
Elizabeth said, I should have driven over straight away when Gina died, and I didn't. I'm sorry. How strange, thought Alice. Everyone had to apologize for something to do with Gina's death.
Why didn't you?
I didn't know if you'd want me there, said Elizabeth. I felt as if I'd say the wrong thing.
You and Gina were such a pair, and you and I, we've drifted.
Alice moved closer to Elizabeth, so their thighs were touching.
Well, let's drift back.
The credits were rolling on the cooking show. I'm going to lose this baby, said Elizabeth.
Alice put her hand over onto Elizabeth's stomach.
I'm going to lose this baby, said Elizabeth again.
Alice put her face down close. She said,
Come on, little niece or nephew. Why don't you just stick around this time? Your mum has been through so much for you.
Elizabeth picked up the remote, turned off the television, and began to cry. Franny's letter to Phil.
He kissed me.
Mr. Moustache, I mean Xavier,
in the back seat of a cab. And I kissed him back.
He could knock me down with a feather, Phil. I like the lions, said Dominic. It was 9 o'clock at night and he was standing at the front door, holding a packet of chocolate biscuits, a bottle of liqueur, and a bunch of tulips. He was wearing jeans and a faded checked shirt, and he needed a shave. Alice looked at George and Mildred, back in their old places, guarding the house. It had been an exhausting effort cleaning them up, and then she'd had to use a wheelbarrow to get them out to the front of the house. Now she couldn't decide if they looked quirky and fun or grubby and tacky.
I just thought I'd drop by on the off chance you felt like some company, he said. If you're too busy planning for tomorrow.
Alice hadn't been doing anything except lying on the couch, staring at the ceiling, and thinking vague thoughts about Elizabeth's baby, and Nick, trying again. Nick seemed to think they should start out with a date.
Maybe a movie, he said.
And Alice had wondered how hard they would have to try as they sat in the movie. Would they have to eat their popcorn really enthusiastically? Have an especially animated conversation afterward? Score each other on how many times they'd been funny, their levels of affection? Would they have to try to kiss as romantically as possible?
No, she didn't want any of this trying. She just wanted Nick to move back home and for everything to be the way it should be. She was tired of all this nonsense. It had been an exhausting day. All the children had sports, one after the other. Olivia played netball, lots of histrionic leaping about, but not much actual contact with the ball. Tom played soccer, excellently, scored 2 goals. And Madison played hockey, abysmally, miserably. "Do you enjoy it?" Alice had asked her as she came off the field. "You know I hate it," Madison had answered. "So why do you play it?" "Because you say I have to play a team sport," she answered. Alice had gone straight up to the coach and pulled Madison from the team. Both the coach and Madison were thrilled. Alice had various duties at each game that she had somehow fulfilled smoothly, almost as if she wasn't an imposter in her own life. She kept score at Madison's hockey game. She helped cook the sausage sizzle at Tom's soccer game. Incredibly, she'd even umpired Olivia's netball. Someone had handed her a whistle, and even as Alice was saying, "No, no, I couldn't possibly," the cool shape of the whistle felt right in her hand. Next thing, she was striding up and down the sideline, blowing sharply on the whistle, while strange words and phrases flew from her mouth. "Step! Held ball! Goal attack, you were offside!" The children obeyed without question. Nick had been there at all the games. There had been no time to talk. He had duties too. He had to be the referee for Tom's soccer game. "We're such parents," Alice had thought, with a mixture of pride and fear. Because was that the problem? Was that why they would have to try? Because she was a mum and he was a dad, and mums and dads were generic, boring, and not very sexy. That's why kissing still went on in laundries at parties? To remind them that they were once randy teenagers? Tomorrow was Mother's Day. Mega Meringue Day. The big day. Probably Alice should have been preparing things. Finishing off paperwork, making last-minute phone calls to check people had done what they were meant to do. But she wasn't especially interested in Mega Meringue Day. Anyway, the committee had seemed to have things under control the other day. "Come in," she said to Dominic, her eyes on the chocolate biscuits. "The children asleep?" he asked. "Yes, although..." She was about to say something light-hearted about Tom probably still playing with his Nintendo under the covers, but the haircutting experience with Madison made her stop. It would be like ratting on her son to the school principal. "How is Kate about Chloe's hair?" she asked. "Predictably hysterical," said Dominic. "I left a message apologizing," said Alice. "She never called back." "You understand that I didn't have any choice but to suspend Madison," said Dominic, as Alice took the flowers out of his hands. "I didn't want..." "Oh, yes, of course. Don't worry about it. These are beautiful, by the way. Thank you." Dominic put down the biscuits on the counter and twisted the bottle of liqueur around and around in his hands. He said, "I'll know when you get your memory back." "How?" said Alice. "By the way you look at me. Now you have this friendly, polite way of looking at me, as if you don't really know me. As if we never even..." Oh, God. Little Chloe Harper was right. They had done sex. He put down the bottle of liqueur and moved closer to her. "No, no, no, not another kiss. That would be wrong. That would not be within the spirit of trying." "Dominic," she said. The doorbell rang. "Excuse me," said Alice. It was Nick at the front door. He was holding a bottle of wine, cheese, biscuits, and a bunch of tulips identical to the ones Dominic had brought over. They must be on special at some local shop. "You fixed the lions," said Nick, delighted. He bent down and patted George on the head. "G'day, old mate." "I should be going." Dominic had come to the front door. Alice saw his gaze take in the flowers and wine. "Oh, hi." Nick straightened, his smile disappearing. "I didn't realize. I won't stop." "No, no, I was just going," said Dominic firmly. "I'll see you tomorrow." He touched Alice on the arm and ran lightly down the steps. Was I interrupting something? Nick followed her down the hallway and saw Dominic's bunch of tulips. "Oh," Everyone is bringing offerings tonight.
Alice yawned. She longed for her life to be normal again, a Saturday night at home. She wanted to say, "I'm tired, I think I'll go to bed," and Finnick to say, without turning his head from the television, "Okay, I'll just finish watching this movie and I'll be up." And then she wanted them to read their books together and switch off the lamps and fall asleep. Who would have thought that a Saturday night at home would ever seem so impossibly exotic? Instead, she opened Dominic's chocolate biscuits and ate one, and watched Nick standing awkwardly in his own kitchen. "Shall I open this?" he said. "Sure." He opened the wine and poured them both glasses. Alice put the cheese on a plate and they sat down on opposite sides of the long table. "Are you coming tomorrow?" asked Alice, eating another chocolate biscuit. "To Mega Meringue Day?"
"Oh, no, I wasn't. Do you want me to go?"
"Of course." Nick laughed in that slightly flabbergasted way.
"All right, then."
"I think it will all be over by lunchtime," said Alice, "so you'll be able to make it to your mother's place."
Nick looked blankly at her.
"For the Mother's Day lunch," said Alice. "Remember? You told Ella you were going at the family talent night."
"Oh, yeah. Right."
"How do you cope without me?" Alice said lightly. Nick's face closed up.
"I cope fine. I'm not totally useless."
Alice flinched at his tone. "I never said you were." She took a piece of cheese. "Or have I said that?"
"You don't believe I'm capable of looking after the children for half the time. According to you, I wouldn't remember all their after-school activities, sign their permission notes or whatever. I'd forget to read the all-important school newsletter. Not sure how I managed to run a company."
"Well, you have a secretary to handle all the pesky details."
She wasn't sure which Alice said that. Snippy Alice from the future or real Alice. Nick had always been a big-picture man. He refilled their wine glasses. "I can't stand only seeing them on weekends. I can't be natural with them. Sometimes I hear my father's voice come out of my mouth when I see them. Fake jolly. I'm driving over to pick them up and I find myself preparing jokes for them. And I think, how did I end up here?"
"Did you spend a lot of time with them during the week?"
"Yeah, I know the point you're trying to make. Yes, I work long hours. But you never seem to remember the times I did come home early. I went bike riding with Madison that time. And Friday nights in summer, I played cricket for hours with Tom. Well, you always say it was just one Friday night, but I know it happened at least twice. And I
wasn't trying to make a point."
Nick twirled the stem of his wine glass and looked up at Alice with an "I'm going to come clean" expression. "I haven't been very good at achieving a life-work balance. I need to work on that. If we work things out, I'll get better at that. I'm committed to that."
"Okay," said Alice.
She wanted to make fun of him for saying, "I'm committed to that." But Nick was acting as though it was some sort of breakthrough moment. It just didn't seem that big a deal to her. So he had to work long hours sometimes. And if that's what he had to do for his career, then fair enough. "I guess my competition doesn't work such long hours," said Nick.
"Competition?"
The wine was going to Alice's head. Her mind was filled with hazy half-thoughts, glimpses of people's faces she didn't know, and vague memories of intense feelings she couldn't describe. "Dominic."
"Oh, him. He's nice, but the thing is, I'm married to you."
"We're separated."
"Yes, but we're trying," Alice giggled.
"Sorry. I don't know why I find it funny." "It's not funny. It's not funny at all. I might actually need a glass of water." She stood up, and as she walked by Nick, she suddenly plonked herself down on his lap like a flirty girl at a party.
"Are you going to try, Nick?" she gurgled into his neck. "Are you going to try really, really hard?"
"You're tipsy," he said. And then he kissed her. And at last everything was as it should be. Her body melted against his with exquisite relief. It was like sinking into a hot bath after being caught in the rain, like sliding under crisp cotton sheets after an exhausting day.
"Daddy?" said a voice from behind them.
What are you doing here?
Nick's legs jerked up so that Alice was catapulted onto her feet. Olivia stood in the kitchen in her pajamas, rubbing her eyes with her knuckles, her cheeks flushed with sleep. She yawned hugely, stretching her arms above her head. She frowned, perplexed, and then an expression of pure delight crossed her face.
Do you love Mummy again?
Franny's letter to Phil.
Kissing, at my age.
Is it allowed?
Is it unseemly?
I feel as though I've broken a rule. Gone full circle and I'm 14 again. We had a lovely night at the Chinese restaurant. It's been so long since I've eaten Chinese. I used to take Elizabeth and Alice when they were little for a special treat. They adored it. Of course now they would be horrified at the thought. Too many calories or carbs or something. We shared a nice bottle of white wine and the steamed dim sums were fabulous. Mr. M was his ridiculous self. After we paid the bill, he asked the waitress if we could go to the kitchen and pay our compliments to the chef. The little girl looked alarmed. She probably thought we were undercover health inspectors. I was saying to her, "Just ignore him, darling." But the next thing, Mr. M marched out to the kitchen and dragged out three young Chinese men dressed in white. There he was, clapping them on the shoulders, loudly telling them a long story about a meal he'd eaten at a fancy hotel in Hong Kong in 1954, and how this was even better than that meal, while all the other diners put down their chopsticks and stared. I got such an attack of the giggles watching those poor young chefs with their polite, bemused smiles, nervously bobbing their heads up and down, obviously thinking this man was quite deranged. In the end, Mr. M convinced the whole restaurant to give them a round of applause. The food wasn't that good. I giggled in the cab the whole way home until finally Mr. M said, "I think there's only one way to shut you up." And the next thing, he was kissing me. "I'm very sorry, Phil. Do you mind?" "Well, bad luck if you do. It's your fault anyway. Why did you need a camping trip with the fellows just before our wedding? You were 40 years old. You shouldn't have had any wild oats left to sow. And then you happily, idiotically, dive headfirst into a river without checking the depth first, you silly fool." Tonight, a handsome man, I may not have referred to his handsomeness previously, kissed me, and it was heavenly. Do you hear that, Phil? Heavenly. I'm going to bed, my dear. May have drunk a little too much Sauvignon Blanc at dinner.
Chapter 30. It was the big day. Alice felt like a small piece of clothing, a sock perhaps, in a large load of washing on the spin cycle. People pulled her this way and that. At one point, she literally had one person on each arm, neither of whom she recognized, trying to pull her in different directions. Worried faces, excited faces, smiley, "ooh, this is it" faces floated by and vanished. People gathered around her in worried clumps, firing questions, telling her about problems, about things that should have been delivered by now.
"Where are the eggs meant to go? Where are the pastry ladies meant to be standing?
The news crew wants to confirm they'll be here by 12. They want to interview you at 12:30. Is that still okay? Are we on schedule?"
News crew? Interviewing her?
Cameras flashed like strobe lights. She should have listened more at the Mega Meringue meetings. She hadn't fully grasped the immense scale of this production. It was mega. They were in a giant, colourful marquee that had been erected on the school oval with a banner proclaiming, "Mega Meringue Day. Watch 100 mums bake the world's biggest lemon meringue pie. $10 entry. Children free. All proceeds to breast cancer research." Inside, the marquee had been set up auditorium style, with raised benches around the sides where people could sit and watch. All around the sides of the tent were placards with the names of companies that were proud to sponsor Mega Meringue Day. Alice saw one for Dino's coffee shop. In the middle was all the equipment for making the pie. It looked like a construction site. There was huge industrial equipment. A forklift, a concrete mixer, a crane, and a specially created pie dish and oven where the pie would be baked. A large, round conference table had been set up with mixing bowls placed at intervals. Next to each mixing bowl was a neat selection of ingredients. Eggs, flour, butter, lemons, and sugar. Maggie's husband, the red-faced man on the treadmill, who appeared to run some sort of manufacturing company, was in charge of the equipment and was ordering around bemused workmen. "Now, let me get this straight. We bake the pastry without the filling first. Is that right?" he said to Alice. Well, at least she knew the answer to that question. "Yes," she said, and then more firmly, "Yes, that's right." "Righto, boss," he said, and hurried off. People were filing into the tent, handing over their cash to two women from the Mega Meringue Committee sitting at the entryway. The benches were filling up fast. A group of children with brass instruments struck up a tune. A corner of the tent had been devoted to activities for the children. All the activities had a mega theme. They would blow giant soap bubbles, toss around a giant foam ball, and paint on a massive canvas with oversized paintbrushes. Alice had left Madison, Tom, and Olivia to enjoy themselves. "All coming together?" said someone. It was Dominic. Jasper was with him, swinging on his father's hand. Alice looked up, met Dominic's eyes, and looked away guiltily. She felt like she'd cheated on him, which, well, maybe she had. "I'm sorry about last night," she said. "Don't even think about that today," he answered. "Oh, but, I wondered if you'd remembered about tonight, Phantom of the Opera?" Nick had taken Olivia back up to bed the night before and then left. They had agreed that their first date would be the following night. They were going back to their old favorite Italian restaurant. Nick had sent a text message saying he'd got the reservations. "Well, I had actually forgotten," began Alice. She really needed to break up with this kind but essentially irrelevant man. "The thing is, Dominic..."
"Alice, my dear!"
It was Kate Harper, looking especially glossy in the morning sunlight streaming through the tent. An unhappy-faced man trailed behind her, along with the sullen Chloe. Chloe's shorn hair had been cut into a stylish bob, but, it had to be said, she wasn't nearly as pretty without her flowing locks. "That's all right. We'll talk later," said Dominic. "Let me know if you need me for anything. I'm right here for you."
"I'm right here for you too, Alice," piped up Jasper.
"I was surprised to see Madison here," said Kate, her voice steely. "I thought you might have kept her at home, in light of the incident."
"Yes, well," began Alice. "It really would have been more comfortable if she'd been in the right in this situation, instead of the indisputable, shameful wrong." "Madison is being very severely punished," she said. Well, she would be, eventually, once Alice got around to thinking of something appropriate. She glanced over and saw Madison looking entranced, as she had a turn blowing the giant soap bubbles. It was just that Madison was in such a lovely mood these days. It seemed a pity to spoil it.
"I hope so," said Kate. She lowered her voice. "Because Chloe is traumatized. She's not eating or sleeping properly. This will be something that will mark her for life."
"Kate, give the poor woman a break," said Kate's husband. "She's got her hands full at the moment." Kate's nostrils flared, as if it had been Alice asking for the break herself.
"I realize you're busy, but I'm not sure you fully appreciate the seriousness of this. Your phone message sounded almost flippant. What Madison did was outrageous."
"Sorry, I'm afraid we need to steal Alice away from you."
It was Maggie and Nora, her friends from the Mega Meringue Committee, scooping up Alice by the elbows and smoothly dragging her away.
"You're not one of our Mega Meringue mums, are you, Kate?" said Nora. "You might want to take a seat."
As Alice looked back over her shoulder, she saw Kate talking furiously into her husband's ear, her hand like a claw on his arm.
"I don't know what I meant to be doing,"
she admitted to Nora and Maggie. I'm just nodding when people ask me questions. This wasn't like netball umpiring, when her mind had somehow switched to autopilot.
It's all right, said Maggie. Everything is running like clockwork, thanks to you.
She waved a sheet of paper in Alice's face with a running sheet for the day and notations in her own handwriting that she didn't remember writing. She could see she'd written, "Stick to schedule," in full capitals and underlined it twice. A disgusted expression crossed Maggie's face.
Oh dear, your ex is here. What's he doing here? Trying to look like an involved father, I suppose.
Ex. At the word ex, Alice immediately visualized her most recent ex-boyfriend before Nick, Peter Burke, the patronizing one who broke her heart. But when she turned around, it was Nick coming through the marquee entrance, looking gorgeous in a blue shirt. She'd told him once he should always wear blue.
I invited him, she said to Maggie.
Maggie studied her.
Oh, well, all right. By the way, we're assuming one of us should take over as MC, said Nora. We could say you haven't been well.
Of course, our resident troll, Mrs. H, would love to get her hands on the microphone and take credit for the whole event if we don't stop her.
Microphone? Said Alice, confused.
Nora gestured toward a microphone on a stand in the center of the marquee.
Good Lord. The idea had been for Alice to get up in front of all those people.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, absolutely yes, one of you can do it, she said.
No problem, said Nora. Her face became neutral as Nick reached them.
Hi, Nick.
Hi, Nora, Maggie. How are you both?
Nick nodded uncomfortably at the two women. It made Alice feel protective of him to see poor Nick in the unpopular ex-husband role. Just like she'd been the cow of an ex-wife with his sister at the family talent night.
Happy Mother's Day, said Nick, as Nora and Maggie disappeared into the crowd.
Did you get breakfast in bed?
Alice nodded.
Pancakes. I think they started cooking them at 5 a.m. There were bangs and crashes and yells. You should see the kitchen now. But I have to say, the pancakes were outstanding. I think Madison is going to be a chef one day. A really messy, bossy, noisy one.
Sorry I wasn't there to supervise, said Nick. Your first Mother's Day without me.
Hopefully my last, said Alice.
Definitely, said Nick. His eyes held hers. I think definitely.
Well, 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 what have we here, Bob? Methinks it's our fine young salsa students.
Nick's father and Alice's mother were upon them.
Roger clapped them on the shoulders, car salesman style, the familiar scent of his aftershave drifting across their faces like a filmy scarf, while Bob stood to the side, shining with pride as if Roger were once again performing a rather tricky feat.
How are you, darling? Said Bob to Alice. You look lovely, of course, but you're so pale. And the shadows under your eyes. There must be something going around at the moment, because Elizabeth is pea green.
Is Libby here? Said Alice with surprise.
She's there with Franny, said Bob, pointing up to one of the bench seats where Elizabeth was sitting with Ben. She did look quite ill. Nausea.
That must be a good sign. At least she wasn't watching television.
Sitting next to Ben was Franny, and next to her, the white-haired man from the family talent night who had organized the wheelchair races. Franny was sitting very upright, glancing around self-consciously, but as Alice looked at her, the man said something in her ear, and she clapped her hands together and burst out laughing.
That's Franny's gentleman friend, said Bob.
Xavier.
Isn't it lovely? After all these years of holding a candle for her silly dead fiancé.
Her what? Said Alice. She pressed a fingertip to her forehead. She didn't think her head could handle any fresh new surprises today.
Her fiancé died just 2 weeks before their wedding.
It wasn't all that long before your father died, said Bob calmly, as if this weren't a huge revelation.
He went away with some mates on a camping trip, and he broke his neck diving into a river. That's why I was always telling you girls to never ever dive anywhere without checking the depth.
Are you saying you knew about this all these years? Said Alice.
She looked up at Franny smiling at Xavier and tried to incorporate this sad new information about her grandmother.
And you kept it a secret?
No need to look so surprised, said Barb crisply.